On this episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks, I interview Kai Kroeger. It was a fantastic conversation talking about his development as a player, his path to USC, tidbits about Shane Beamer, and also insights into the current team. Okay, here we go. Welcome to episode 167 of Cox Talking Gamecocks. I am your host, Tim Cox, and unlike every other episode, I will not be keeping things from 1801 to 2001, as it is a very special episode here, long anticipated, with a lot of buildup, but finally, the Kai Kroeger interview is here. I was lucky enough to connect with Kai, and we had a fantastic conversation. So I really hope that this is a great way to kick off your 4th of July weekend, Gamecock Nation. Figured maybe some people are in the car, some people are getting on a plane, maybe you're just chilling on a boat, and you are thinking of me, and you say, hey, let's put Tim on out in Lake Murray, chilling. Hey, perfect way to spend your holiday weekend celebrating our independence here. But yeah, in all seriousness, it was a fantastic interview. I'm going to let it speak for itself, but I think you will get a very cool understanding of Kai as a person, as a football player, life as an SEC athlete, and then really the second half of the interview dug in more about the team specifically, Coach Beamer, Coach Lembo, and of course, I had to touch on the finish to last season, got a little bit of insight into what the vibes were like to make those historic wins happen. And it was a very cool time. Very blessed to sit down with Kai. Huge, huge thank you to Kai. I told him already, but he is welcome back anytime. And I am quickly becoming the specialist podcast between Parker White and Kai Kroeger. So if you're a specialist at South Carolina, give me a heads up, or give me a call, rather. Would love to have you on the show. But yeah, I'm not going to bore y'all anymore, not going to build this up anymore. Without further ado, here's Kai Kroeger. Okay, want to welcome on a very special guest to the show. Only my second athlete interview. He is our punter, the one and only Kai Kroeger. Kai, I got a lot of accolades for you here, so we're going to just name a few. 2022 first team all SEC unanimous, 2022 first team all American, that was ESPN.com and the Athletic, there we go, and 2020 SEC coaches all freshman team. Thanks for coming on the show, man. How's it going?
Doing good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. So like I said, you're the second person to come on this show. The first was Parker White. So okay. I am quickly becoming the specialist podcast, which like I'm totally cool with. But there we go. I started off with a very hard-hitting question with him. Going to do the same with you. So we're really just jumping right into things here. What is your favorite bar in Five Points?
You know, you're probably not going to believe me, but I actually have not gone out one time.
Oh, okay. You're right. You're right. I don't believe you.
Yeah. Hard to believe. You could ask Parker. I mean, he knows. But so I actually don't have a favorite. Okay. I turned 21 on Sunday. Maybe I'll be able to answer that in the future, but not
fair enough. Fair enough. Well, first off, happy birthday early. Thank you. You know, just a good law abiding citizen here for our team. But yep. So let's pivot then. Give me your favorite restaurant.
In Columbia?
Yeah.
I've only been there a handful of times, but definitely Hall's Chop House.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I love that place.
Good choice. For anybody who's deep in Gamecock Twitter, they know Hall's is the place where you got to go and you got to tweet about it. I don't know if you've seen that, but
have to.
Absolutely. Cool deal. So let's take a step back here. Wanted to talk about your path to Carolina. So being originally from Illinois, was there a desire to, like, once you started to gain attention of colleges, did you want to break the mold and go outside of the region, or was there a pull to stay in Big Ten country? Obviously, we know where you ended up, but what did that decision process look like?
Yeah, I think ever since I was younger, I wanted to come down south. At that point, I never had like a favorite school, just because our family was always NFL fans. Mm-hmm. It didn't really have a specific college. So for me, it was just somewhere in the south, somewhere warm. That's kind of what it started with. Mm-hmm. But then kind of growing up and playing football, there was definitely a point in time where I thought, you know, staying closer to home would be more beneficial for me, just because I'm more of a homebody. You know, I love talking to my family. I talk to them almost every day and that kind of thing. But so it definitely brought a little conflict into the mix. But when it came down to, I guess, deciding where I wanted to go or where preferences were, I figured that coming down south was the place to go. And my family wanted me to come down as well. They love it in the south. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, obviously, winters in Columbia are a hell of a lot better than anywhere in Illinois. And then it's a great, it's a great reason to visit. Now, was there anything in particular that drove you to USC? Like, talk me through the recruiting process and all that jazz.
Yeah. So it was during my junior year and we're kind of looking at schools and their punter situations. And I trained with the organization Coles Kicking, which Parker has gone to them as well. And so they played a huge role because I had kind of reached out to them as a resource and asked them, what college camp should I go to? You know, where is realistic? And they have connections all over. And so Jamie Cole, who owns the organization, recommended that I go to the specialist camp at USC. And I actually, there was two schools. There was Washington and then here at Carolina, those two camps on the same day. And we had no idea which one to go to. And for my situation, I was looking for a scholarship just based off, you know, our family situation. And so talking with the Coles guys, they said, you know, 100% go to Carolina. We have a great connection there. At that time, Coach Hutzler was a special teams coordinator with Coach Muschamp. So I went to the camp. And then luckily after the camp, they offered me. And kind of at that point, I knew I was going to go there just because they had anything and everything I could want. My sister and her family live in Charlotte, so I have family nearby. I just kind of worked out perfectly. And then a month later, I committed.
Wow. Awesome. Okay. So you did have that little family connection right there. You mentioned you want to stay close. I mean, that makes sense. So yeah, really stars really aligned for you. And I mean, as a fan, I'm glad you didn't go to Washington because it's been a pleasure to have you. I mean, first off, it was crazy to hear you're entering your senior season. Like I've been watching the team, you know, forever. Right. But to see that, I was like, holy shit. Like where did the time go? But
yeah, it's flown by.
Yeah. Right. But you mentioned you were looking for a scholarship, and I would imagine it's unique as a specialist where it's not like a wide receiver or O lineman where coaches are bringing in a lot of depth every cycle, right? Yeah. So it's not like you came in with three punters. Always you're going to have that competitive fire. Mm-hmm. But did you feel that added pressure or anything like that coming in as sort of the guy they put the scholarship on as a specialist?
Yeah, I'd say definitely my freshman year, I felt the pressure just because obviously Joe Charlton was here before me. Mm-hmm. He's got like all the school records and whatnot. So he was kind of everyone saying, like, is this the next Joe Charlton? Mm-hmm. And I kind of put that on myself, which looking back, I obviously regret. And I've changed my mindset since where it's like, I'm not trying to be anybody, just obviously the best version of myself. So that freshman year, there definitely was a lot of pressure I put on myself. Obviously, the outside pressure. You know, going from playing in front of, I don't know, 5,000 people, maybe in a playoff game to now it's like 80,000 every week.
Yeah.
At least. So there definitely was added pressure. But once I kind of got over that hump and obviously talking with, you know, my family and coaches and mentors and that kind of thing, they obviously helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say once I got over that hump of like the added pressure, then I've been able to kind of calm down and, you know, make every season better ever since then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've definitely settled into a really nice groove, and like we're going to touch on that in a little bit, but it's been really cool to see like year over year, and just as a fan perspective, having someone like yourself who's steady, can flip the field and things like that, it is nice. And it might, you know, y'all might not get all the praises that say Juice gets, right?
Yeah,
but it is very, very cool to see. Now, you mentioned Joe, and I was curious, did you interact with him at all? Did he have any words of advice as you entered Carolina, or was there like any interaction there?
Oh yeah, we still talk to this day, and I go over to his indoor golf simulator he owns.
Oh, nice.
In Lexington a little bit, but yeah, I mean, from once I committed, he had kind of been texting me, you know, congratulations, let me know if you need anything, that kind of thing, and also gave me kind of some tips about how the wind moves in Williams-Brice and you know, some other stadiums like that. So he's definitely been a great mentor and someone that, you know, obviously I look up to, being the predecessor and that kind of thing. But yeah, we talk frequently, and he's someone like, I can remember, when we were going to play in the bowl game, my freshman year, the COVID year, which we ended up not playing in, but he had texted me, he was with the Panthers at this time, cause it was going to be in the Buccaneer Stadium. And I remember he just shot me a text and said, you know, something about like a minor adjustment with my drop and like how to swing, cause the wind does these certain things in the stadium. So it's just kind of little bits and pieces that he's kind of thrown at me throughout my career. It's definitely helped me a lot. And obviously he comes to some of the games, so I talk with him on the sideline and that kind of thing. So it's great that we've been able to keep up that relationship.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I don't really know what I expected. I didn't think there'd be like, no, like don't talk to me kind of deal. But it's cool that the relationship has maintained to this day.
Yeah, and then, definitely.
I mean, you said something, now I'm genuinely curious. Like, how does the wind move as a punter in Williams-Brice?
You know, I try to, as I've kind of played now, I've played 3 years. So I've been trying to kind of minimize all the outside factors that I can't control.
Okay.
So I believe, from what I remember, it comes in from the student section. Mm-hmm. If you're facing the student section, the right side, that opening.
Okay.
And then comes around and swirls and exits, like kind of forms a big U.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be at one end of the field and the flags, it looks like it's coming into you, but up high, the wind's actually moving away from you. So it's just kind of little stuff like that, that you pick up on, but it's kind of just like a big swirl.
Nice. Okay. That's a great tidbit that I'm going to drop at a bar. Like,
there you go.
Like, so yeah, guys, definitely. It's like a U. You got to understand,
but there you go.
You talked about the COVID year. So your freshman year, I mean, talk about a start to your college career. Yeah. I mean, schedule change and just everything that came with that. So all things considered, though, you had a pretty impressive year. I mean, you were fantastic in the Auburn game. We saw the first glimpse of your throwing ability. Like, walk me through what that meant for your development as a player, because, you know, the team had a tough year, right? It was a struggle for a lot of teams, right? But USC struggled a lot. So what did that do for you as your development as a player? And then just, I guess it was really just thrown into the fire as far as adjusting to college life, because you had so many rules and restrictions. So just kind of walk me through that first year.
Yeah, there's definitely kind of, it was an eye-opening experience going from high school, then, you know, 2 days later, you're here at college with people that you've never like talked to before, mm-hmm. coaches you've never played for before. And you're just kind of trying to get comfortable. Mm-hmm. But I'd say a blessing for me was kind of being uncomfortable, because something that kind of I try to live by and that I've heard a lot is be comfortable being uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
And kind of putting yourself in situations where, you know, you're never kind of settling or, like I said, never being comfortable. So that definitely kind of helped build me as a player, both on and off the field. But also in terms of the season, you know, obviously COVID was horrible. You know, everyone agrees with that. But coming in as a freshman, I had just turned 18 when the season started, and kind of coming into the environment where it was still SEC football. I think we still had like 20% capacity or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, you know, the full on kind of full stadiums, that kind of thing. It helped me. I definitely had nerves, but it wasn't as severe as I think it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in no way am I saying COVID was good, because no one would say that.
We are a big anti-COVID podcast. By
yes.
the way.
Yeah. Okay. But as like a young football player coming in and starting, it kind of helped bring me into the college football world.
Yeah. So sort of like a bite-sized SEC experience, mm-hmm. which you can get your feet wet. You know what? That's actually kind of interesting. I never really thought of it that way. And
yeah,
I mean, I guess all things tend to kind of work out. But
yeah.
Now, in the vein of academics, you know, you mentioned adjusting to college life. Like, you've made the SEC academic honor roll in the past. What are some challenges, maybe that not everybody understands, that come with being a student athlete, and how have you adapted to that?
Yeah, definitely time management has been something that I've had to kind of make a priority in my life, just because, you know, for us, we practice or work out in the mornings, and then typically you have class, depending on, you know, your schedule, every day, or every day or every other day until, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock. Some people have class till about 7 or 8. So you're trying to, for me, I don't have to worry about like the playbook for football, but I'm still trying to keep my body in shape, and then going from practice straight to class, most of the time back-to-back classes. And then, you know, you've got to study and kind of repeat it all the next day. Whereas, you know, some people might just have 1 or 2 classes a day, but, you know, you have 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, and you have a little bit more free time. I feel like it's definitely a lot of added pressure once you throw in the practice and workouts. And then, you know, on top of that, you have to keep a, you know, certain grades, and you can't miss class or else you have to sit out the game and that kind of thing. So time management has been a big deal. And, you know, fortunately, I've worked it with my academic advisor, and we kind of plan everything out at the start of each semester. So it hasn't been too difficult for me, but definitely kind of when I first got here and getting used to it, it was a big jump.
Yeah, I would imagine so, coming out of high school. Now, you kind of mentioned you're doing a great job of leading into the next questions, which is just fantastic. Perfect. So, you know, you mentioned time management. Now, when I had Parker on the show, I was curious about like, what does a week look like in the fall? It's like, how do practices build? And he shed a little light on that. But I've always wondered, like, what does the day-to-day look like? So during the season, like, what time does your day start? When do workouts begin? When do you leave? And then, like, when do you end your day to do it all over again?
Yeah, I'd say during the season, I'm trying to think. I've started recently waking up a good bit earlier to try to get in the facility earlier to do some treatment, get my body moving, because I'm pretty sluggish in the mornings.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, always trying to find a way to get my body going and get up. So I think I was waking up at 5:30 or so.
Okay.
And trying to get to the facility at 5:45 or 6.
Wow.
And then I would, you know, do treatment, you know, hot and cold tub, that kind of thing, eat a good breakfast. But so pretty much for me, from, we'll just say 6 a.m. until about 12 o'clock or so, or noon, that was kind of my window of football at the facility.
Okay.
And then from there, depending on the day, I would have class typically from 1:15 until 4:30 or 5 o'clock. And then after that, that's when I would try to do some leisure activities. I love to golf.
So okay, nice.
I'd try to go to the driving range or just do something to kind of get my mind off of everything I've done that day. And then maybe later that night or the next day, depending on if I have class or not, is when I look over schoolwork, do anything I need to do, and just kind of get ready for the next day.
Okay. Wow. So yeah, jam-packed. And then, so I mean, during the season, so you said you're at the facility, give or take 6 a.m., which is early. But when do the practices themselves start? Is it like y'all got to be dressed by 8, or like how does that work?
Yeah, so we have meetings before we actually go out. So I'm trying to think. Meetings will go, we'll say, from 8 to 9:15 or so.
Okay.
And then we have to be on the field at 9:45, 10 o'clock-ish for walkthroughs. And then practice starts, and practice goes until, I think, a little before 12, or depending on the day, kind of in that range. And then yeah, everyone's done. But a lot of guys will stay after and do extra stuff or go in the training room or watch film, that kind of thing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So yeah, it's a jam-packed day. I'm just thinking of it. It's a jam-packed day. So you are entering your senior year. I hated getting this question when I was a student, but I have to ask you, like, what are your plans for next year? Like, I mean, is there a plan to try the next level? Do you have like goals, aspirations professionally? Like, what are we looking at?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, as of now, I'm definitely looking at my fifth year, just based on, you know, how my years have gone and what I want to achieve both individually and as a team. But I'd say as a career, my goal is to play in the NFL. So that's what I'll be pursuing 100%. But my, I guess, plan B or whatever you want to call it, is I'd like to get into FBI kind of law enforcement field.
Oh, like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So kind of two totally different.
Did not expect that coming.
But Yeah, so that's kind of my plan if football doesn't work out.
Hell yeah. Kai yeah. Kroger, FBI agent. I absolutely love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
So I guess, you know, outside of football, like you mentioned you like the golf. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Any other hobbies that you do? Like, how do you spend a personal day?
I'll definitely go play golf.
Okay.
A lot of times I do Pilates now.
Okay.
So kind of on off days, that's just kind of a way to keep the body moving, that kind of thing. I love to fish. I've got like 6 rods in my garage right now.
Okay, nice.
Right here. When I'm back home, I like to go trap and skeet shooting. Mm-hmm. My grandfather kind of took us when we were younger doing that. So that's kind of another leisure activity I like to do. But otherwise, I do play some video games.
Okay. What's your game?
Right now, it's Rainbow Six Siege.
Okay.
It's like a miniature Call of Duty. There's only like 10 people in the game, and it's like just smaller.
Nice.
But I'd say that or the PGA golf game.
I love those.
Those are the two I bounce between right now.
Nice. So golf is the big theme, feels like.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Who's got the best handicap on the team?
I think it's Alex Herrera, one of our kicker punters.
Yeah.
I actually live with him. But he's consistently low 70s.
Jeez.
Yeah. So he's good.
That's impressive.
He's good. He's very good.
So to bring it back to football, you were there when the coaching change happened. I don't want to dive into all that. So, but now that you've been playing with Beamer, under Beamer rather, for a few years, what are some things or coaching techniques rather that he has brought to the table that you personally responded well to?
I would say, and this is something that we all 100% responded to, obviously me too, would be the accountability that he brought in and the positive attitude that he brings every single day.
Mm.
That was maybe two areas where we weren't fully invested in when I got here. And obviously when I came here, it was, you know, a bad year because of, you know, obviously COVID, but then also guys are playing half a season and leaving, and the attitudes were very negative, which I was surprised because I thought, you know, I remember in high school, we'd have games where we'd be negative because the school is normally good. But, you know, I thought at the college level, everyone is like, you know, we can win every game. And that wasn't always the case. So, you know, Coach Beamer came in and it's like every single week is a game that we can win and that we should win, almost kind of have that mindset. And also accountability is like before some guys would kind of get away with doing things or maybe being late or not get punished as much. But now there's a lot more, not only player leading going on and players holding other players accountable, but coaches are also involved. And, you know, you don't want to be that one guy because every position group gets a report of like if somebody's late.
Oh, wow.
It's like in a text with all the coaches and the strength staff and all the players. So it's like you don't want to be that guy. But also, you know, your teammate's going to get on you and be pissed at you if you do something bad or, you know, or show up late. So it's kind of taken a 180 in terms of our accountability as a team overall. And I think it's showed on the field kind of each year. Each year we've developed a lot in that category and we've had more and more success every year.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of touched on it, but like, so you feel that like even just peer to peer leadership has increased as a result of some of this.
100%. And like we always, something that we try to focus on is the great teams are player led and you know, the average or good teams are coach led. And so, you know, once we can get to a point, and you know, we're obviously getting there, probably like every other team, but where, you know, players are the ones sending out messages and checking out other players and, you know, holding coaches pretty much don't have to really do anything. That's when you're going to find, or that's when you're going to have a championship level team.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really cool phrase. I've never quite thought of it like that. I mean, when I was at school, so I was there from 2011 to 2015. So I was there for some pretty solid years. I got super lucky.
Yeah, definitely.
But especially on like that, I think of the defense that those teams had. And it was just guys who just weren't going to take no for an answer. And like, they would just go out and ball. So like, that's really cool to think of. I never quite put it on like the great teams are player led in that sense. And I guess you really can see it, right? I mean, just thinking of some of the older guys who have been on the team, you know, like maybe yourself, but like, think of a guy who, you know, he's not here now, but like Zach Pickens.
Yeah.
I feel like you saw him taking a little bit more of a role on. So that's actually,
definitely.
Yeah, that's really cool insight. And then you guys have tended to play really well and bounce back after a game that maybe didn't go our way. How does Coach Beamer or anyone else on the staff like respond in those moments in that week of practice to help that?
Yeah, I'd say one of Coach Beamer's best qualities is his ability to kind of live in the moment and not reflect on the past or look to the future. Because, you know, after some of those games we had, if you look at like a Florida or Georgia game this past season, where it probably goes as bad as it could go for us, he comes in the very next day. And, you know, obviously we talk about the game we just played and he goes over some stuff, but it's almost like he forgot about that game. And now it's all about the next opponent. And that like his mindset kind of infuses into all the players, because now we're getting to a point where, you know, we reflect, we watch film on the past game, that kind of thing. But now we're eager to look at the next opponent, and that's all we're focusing on. Because, you know, if we're upset and about the last game and it carries over to the next game, you're going to get beat just as bad if you're playing with that emotion.
Yeah.
So it's all about just kind of like wash it away, you know, get rid of it and just focus on the next team.
Yeah. I mean, that's super impressive. That's obviously it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
I would imagine. And I mean, as a fan, like I was still upset about the Florida game, like the morning of Saturday, the next game, I think was, that would have been Tennessee. Right. So it was just, I was like, oh man, like here we go. But man, yeah, you guys responded incredibly, incredibly well these last couple of seasons. But I have to talk about Pete Lembo. So what's it like been learning under him?
I don't really know how to describe it, besides it's something that I probably can't even describe with words. It's almost like you have to have the Pete Lembo experience.
Okay. Nice. That could be a band name.
It's like, it's like every day you know what you're getting, but at the same time you don't. Like, you know, whether it's him, whether it's him changing his like references or jokes day to day, or him coming up with a new punt formation, or in some cases, you know, we ran our fakes. He's always looking ahead at, you know, what can we do to impact the game on special teams? And like we saw last year, special teams was probably the deciding factor in a few of our wins. And so, you know, it's definitely helped me develop as a player, and also kind of changed my mindset to where I'm looking at the game, not as a punter, but more as a football player. And so where I'm learning, you know, I'm looking at our kickoff return unit, and I can tell by how they're standing or how they drop, what we're running, and also how maybe the opponent's punt block team is, you know, how they're lining up. I know what kind of look they're going to send just because I'm looking at it from kind of his perspective. And that all goes back to how he teaches us. And, you know, we watch film, maybe not as much as the other guys, but we watch a good amount of film, and he kind of shows us and explains to us, you know, when they're in this look, they're going to do this, just to kind of make us better football players all around.
Cool. Yeah, that's really neat. And it's been really cool to see like special teams, like being a calling card of the program. And you're going to have some years where like your offense is up and down. You're going to have some years where defense up and down, but like, if you can rely on special teams and it is that X factor, like you said, it really can make a difference. And it was really, really cool to see this past year, like what you guys did in some of those, spots. There was one game, I think it might've been the Florida game, where you had a pass in that game, right?
I did.
Yeah. Was that a touchdown?
It was.
Okay. Yep. Casual. Yeah. But I was watching it with a buddy who went to Florida, and I was like, we might as well just fake it. And he's like, yeah, you guys should. And everyone in the bar was like, just fake it, fake it. And so it's like the whole world knew it was coming, but yet you executed it flawlessly. So really cool to see the job you guys have done. But to speak about yourself as a punter, we'll get to your throwing in a second. How much time goes into building the trust with yourself and like any long snapper that you've worked with?
Yeah, I'd say, because when I came in as a freshman, I had one snapper and he was my snapper the whole year. Then my sophomore season, I had the same snapper up until the last four games. And then we switched to Hunter, who's our long snapper now. And then he snapped those last four games than all of last season. Okay. So I think it all comes down to how many reps you're getting off season. But then also just being like good friends. I mean, he lives probably 50 yards from me right across the street. And we're hanging out all the time. I go fishing with him. We golf a lot together. And although that has like nothing to do with football, mm-hmm. I've seen his, I see his work ethic, not only in the weight room, but also when it comes to snapping, and also being able to talk to him about whatever off the field. There's like no doubt in my mind when I go out there that I'm worried about where the snap's going to be or whatever. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, he probably snaps it as fast as anyone in the country. And now he's got, now he's like dialed it into where it's going to hit me pretty much in the same spot every time. And so that just makes my job a lot easier. I don't have to worry about his, about how fast I'm going to go or that kind of thing, just cause I know I'm going to get the same thing every time.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it comes down to being friends, right? Like, yeah, like right. You, if you get along with your friend, you're going to work together. What are some drills or some other things that you do in practice that the average person would not think of, like, to improve, right? Like, I would just kind of think you go through the reps and everything like that. Like, are there anything that just we don't ever think of, or like any techniques that you work on?
When it comes to punting, really the main things that I try to focus on are doing drops, which is just
okay.
What just spin the ball to yourself and try to drop at the same time or the same way every time. But then also doing ball drills, which is something we do at every practice. Not a lot of it has to do with actually kicking the ball, just because that really muscle memory kind of takes that over. But pretty much the only thing or the main things that's going to affect the punt are how well you catch the ball and your drop. I'd say the drop is the most important part. So we'll have a practice, or we'll have a period during practice where whether it's Mitch or our assistant special teams coach will just sit there with footballs and throw them at us with, you know, he'll throw some knuckleball, like some snap, or he'll throw some in a ways that you never would like receive a snap. But that's just gets us used to catching footballs, molding them, getting them in the right spot, and then dropping them correctly. Kind of like what you would see a wide receiver do to work on their hands. And also one of our combo guys, William Joyce, him and I have started to go over and use the jugs machines.
Oh,
and we've been firing 100 footballs at each other after every workout, just catching them, doing that same thing, just because that's the most important part of what we do.
Okay. Yeah. See, there you go. I would never have thought of y'all using one of those machines. So, you know, just a little peek behind the curtain a little bit.
Exactly.
And then, like, you personally, does one game stick out during your time so far as either your best or the most memorable, like, knee-jerk reaction? Anyone stick out?
I think a game that covers probably both of those categories was Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
This past year.
Yeah.
That's probably a game that I'll never, or probably many people won't ever forget.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, being able to be a part of it and also being able to contribute special teams as a whole. You know, obviously we had the strip on there. Clemson's like, they tried to run some random kickoff return and we got the ball back. Obviously we forced a fumble on the punt team. Fortunately we had a lot of good bounces on the punt team to pin them back. And just kind of make the game that much harder for them. And then winning the way we did, I think, you know, we obviously you look back and you think, oh, we should have won by so much more or whatever. But I think, you know, winning by 1 point was kind of like the cherry on top for us.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like 1 point or 21. It does. It like no one cared at that point.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. You guys were definitely part of one of the more memorable wins. And honestly, since I've been a fan. So it's been very cool. What is a challenging, maybe an underrated challenging place to play in the SEC?
Honestly, Missouri. I've only played there one time, but the one time I played there, for some, there's just something about that place that just like throws you off.
It stinks.
I don't want to throw too much shade, but let's just say it's not one of my more favorite or one of my, you know, more liked stadiums. Missouri. I think that's really the only place that I maybe don't like going to as much.
Okay.
I think the places that are kind of like a cool experience with Texas A&M and Georgia.
Mm.
Obviously, we go back there to those places this year.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of like a whole experience going to those games.
Yeah.
And those are definitely places where I'm actually looking forward to going to, even though it's away games.
Can sort of like appreciate it maybe like as returning instead. What is I mean, I did not even prepare this question here, but what is College Station like? Because I imagine, and I've joked about this on the show, that it's like Mars. I would imagine there's just like not a lot going on. And then there's Kyle Field. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, it's kind of like flat. Obviously, there's little buildings here and there, but all of a sudden there's just this massive, I mean, I don't need a Coliseum looking. It's just like, it's massive. And then obviously being inside, it just kind of goes straight up all the way around you.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy playing there, and they actually have nice fans, or at least they're nice to me or whatever.
Okay.
So I like going there. Georgia is maybe not so nice, but in terms of their fans and students, but it's still fun.
Yeah. There's a little more build up there, a little more, a little more disdain.
Definitely.
And then, so speaking of tough places to play, Willie B was absolutely rocking with those lights this year. I mean, what was your initial reaction when that first sandstorm hit week one under the lights? Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think I can speak for probably everyone, not only on the sidelines, but the stadium, where we all just got chills and started just going crazy. I mean, we have like a group on the sideline to dance to Sandstorm and kind of just start moving our bodies in ways that don't even make sense. You're just kind of jumping around and all that kind of thing. So
I mean, that's what one does.
Exactly. Yeah. But those lights have definitely, you know, made our stadium 100 times better and more intimidating for opponents coming in. And we love it. And, you know, we're definitely looking forward to that first Sandstorm against Furman.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like I was at the A&M game and I was just screaming like, this is like the freaking Super Bowl. Like it was
what it felt like. Yeah.
It was insane. But I have had this passing thought, like you're getting ready on the sidelines. Like, let's say it's the middle of the game, right? It's not the opening kickoff. It's the middle of the game. Sandstorm lights, whatever going off. Maybe it's just like a promotion. Like, is it at all distracting? Like, you know, or are you trying to like catch a long snap practice? And you're like, man, I got these damn lights all going on and off. Is it at all distracting?
Very rarely. Normally we kind of time out when we get our snaps.
Okay.
And kind of holds or that kind of thing. But definitely at halftime and then before kickoff. And sometimes during the game when the lights are, you know, going on and off or flashing red. We'll be trying to get reps and it's kind of hard to see the ball. So you just kind of hope you catch it or that kind of thing. But it really doesn't affect us too much.
Yeah. It's a net positive.
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a net positive. Cool deal. So I got a few more and then I will get you out of here. But we have to talk about the finish that you guys had last year. We talked about Florida was a little tough, but the turnaround that you guys had, it's tough to put into words, honestly. Like as a fan, you look back at that and you're just like, yes, like that was it. And I think if we're sitting here in 3, 4, 5 years and the team is where we all hope and believe it can get, I think those 2 weeks we can point at as that was the moment that we sort of established ourselves as we can do this, right? But walk me through that week of practice leading up to the Tennessee game. Was there anything that you noticed? Was the vibe different? Was just the attitude different that you're like, all right, we totally got this. Like, no panic. Like, was there anything different or was it just business as usual and you just executed it flawlessly?
I'd say there definitely was, and this is kind of whenever you're playing maybe like a more, I don't know the word to use, but maybe like a more intense opponent or teams that have maybe more history than others. Kind of like, you know, the Tennessees, Georgia, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's definitely a little bit more juice and guys are more amped up. Especially we're good at kind of blocking out the outside noise, but maybe also using it as an advantage because, you know, all over social media, everyone's telling us, you know, you guys are going to get wiped. You know, they're favored by 3 touchdowns. They have the best offense in the country, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So all we're hearing is how they're this and they're that and, you know, how we're not anything like that. So we use it as motivation and kind of like a way to kind of silence everybody. And although we're focused on what we do and, you know, our jobs, it's definitely, at least for me, I kind of use the outside noise as motivation. And then obviously after we get the job done, it's kind of like a, you know, we proved everybody wrong and, you know, there's no reason to think that one of the, you know, they're better than us or we can't do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's it. Yeah, that week definitely was more intense. And I think it just led winning that game. We kind of took off from there. And obviously the next game was, you know, the biggest one of the year. And we kind of reached levels that, you know, we hadn't reached before. Mm-hmm. In terms of confidence and also play style.
Yeah. I mean, it was really a sight to see. It was so, so incredible. I could only imagine what it was like for you guys, like in that, yeah, in that building. And then, yeah, I mean, going into the Clemson game, was the air in the building like, we just did that. Like we can do anything that we put our minds to. Like, was there an emphasis on like, we got to end this streak. Like, we're going to go to their place and do this. The stars have aligned. Like, was there any additional more juice than there was to Tennessee?
I think a little bit, just because everyone knows that, you know, they had that home winning streak. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew that we hadn't beaten them in however many years it was. And so although everyone knows that, I'd say this is another thing Coach Beamer does well, is he doesn't try to bring on all these external factors to try to, you know, change our mindset or change how we play. Because what I've noticed that when we play games and it's like, oh, their coach said this, so we're going to get him back. We haven't won the game, or, you know, we just play bad because we're not playing for the right reasons. And so, you know, with that game especially, it was like, yeah, they have this win streak. Yeah, we haven't beaten them, but all we have to do is, you know, do what we do and we can win. And, you know, we saw that the week before with Tennessee. And so, you know, this team is, you know, just another nameless, faceless opponent. That's what Coach Beamer says, nameless and faceless. And so that's how we approached that week. And I think it showed on the field.
Yeah, for sure. So you're saying it's kind of a deal where we got to mention it at least once. Like, you know, this is a big opponent rivalry. Yep. Like, yes, there's history, but all right, that's it. Like, move on and do your work. All right. That's neat. And then I'm not trying to, you know, get into the secrecy of the locker room and anything, but was there anything you can share, like at the half, like, was there a message that it was like, you got this? Like, if you're willing to divulge, like, what was the message overall theme at the halftime?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, coach was just saying, in everything that has happened, we were expecting, in a sense, you know, we knew they were going to come out. It was going to be a tough game. You know, there was going to be adversity. They were going to have highs. We were going to have highs, that kind of thing. But we're right where we're supposed to be. And, you know, we're in a position where we can take over the game in the second half. And especially being a team where you kind of saw throughout the season where we excelled in the second half.
Yeah.
We knew that at that point it was a time where we could take over the game, and all three phases were going to play a huge role. Coach made that clear. And, you know, up until that point, there was moments where all three phases were contributing, but, you know, that second half where we kind of took over the game and, you know, obviously sealing it off the way we did, was awesome. But, you know, it's Coach Beamer does a great job of, you know, it's like, we're where we're supposed to be at halftime. You know, this is no shock. And all we got to do is just continue to play our brand of football.
Mm-hmm. To having like a steady hand.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's neat. And then, I mean, what do you think contributes to having those strong second halves? Like, is it truly coaches are saying we have to change X, Y, Z? Like, what goes into that?
I'd say it's a mix of a few things. Obviously, you play the first half and you kind of get a feel for what the opponent's doing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times at halftime, that's when players will step up and you really see that player-led kind of attitude in full effect. And, you know, linebackers are talking to safeties, you know, running backs are talking to the linebacker. Like, everyone's talking about, you know, what they're seeing, what they need to do, adjustments they need to make. I don't really try to say too much to the other guys. You know, let them do their offense and defense thing. And yeah, we'll talk to ourselves. But yeah, it's that's when, you know, everybody's talking and the communication is, you know, the highest it's ever been.
Huh. Very cool. Very cool. Well, speaking about talking, do you ever talk shit to Spencer Rattler about your throwing stats, that like you might have the best arm on the team? How's like,
we joke about it a good bit. I think obviously you can't really compare us at all. But you know, I try to give him, you know, some hell here and there, and we've golfed before and we do that crossbar challenge before the game. So that's when I try to, you know, try to beat him in some way there. But you know, he thinks it's funny and he jokes with me about it too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, I mean, you got the punting, you got the throwing. I mean, what's next? Can we see you at linebacker at all? Like what's the next challenge?
You know, I would prefer not to have to hit anybody, but maybe a run. We'll see. Okay. So maybe I get to run with it.
I'm here for it. And then I don't know if you've noticed, but I've tweeted this at you. I've tagged you on the Instagram. Maybe I'm not the first one to come up with it. I like to think that I am, but Kaisman, Kai and Heisman. So I'm asking for official permission to dub you Kaisman as your nickname.
Of course. Go ahead.
All right. Love it.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
stamping it.
There you go.
And then just last question here for you, man. Any personal goals that you're setting for yourself this year on the field?
I'd say there definitely are personal goals, but before I say that, I will say that I'm more so looking at obviously the team goals and mm-hmm. what we can do as a team. But for me, I feel like if I accomplish my personal goals, that will help the team. Mm-hmm. So I'd say I definitely want to break Joe's record for punting average here. Mm. I know we're good friends, but obviously that's a goal I have to try to achieve. I'd like to have over 50% of my punts inside the 20. I think I had that last year, but definitely 50 would be like where I want to be at. That's mm-hmm. I'd say that's a really good mark. But if I can, you know, improve more so than I did last year, because, you know, the more we keep them back, you know, the harder it is to score. Mm-hmm. And then one part of my game that I've been trying to improve on and that kind of thing is my hang times, because I think a lot of times I hit punts in games where, you know, they might have gone 60 yards, but they only have 4 seconds of hang time or that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And then the opponent, they're able to get, you know, a return, and then our net punt isn't as good as it could have been. So, you know, I've been working hard in the weight room, trying to put on weight, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and trying to mess around with different tactics. And I think, you know, I'm going to be in a good spot. But those three things are personal goals that I'm, you know, pushing for. But if those are achieved, then that will contribute to the team's success.
For sure. Love it. Team first mentality. Absolutely. Stuff that we love to see, man. But this was a blast, man. Thanks for coming on. You're welcome back anytime, whenever. Featured guest, but good luck to you and good luck to the whole team next season. We're really, as fans, it's been a pleasure watching you guys over the last couple seasons. We're really excited for what's to come, and, you know, best of luck to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is awesome.
All right, y'all. There you have it. My opinion, a fantastic interview. I hope y'all enjoyed it too. Going to try and continue to do fun things like that for the show, but man, I am just jacked up for football season. I know we're all ready to celebrate the 4th, but man, the fall cannot get here soon enough. You could tell, talking to Kai, that he's ready, and he talked about the team having some goals. He's just trying to be a part of that. Just really, really cool message, and man, I am excited for football. But with that, y'all, that wraps up this episode. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like, subscribe, and review the podcast. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.